Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hi, welcome back. Why does it take us five times every time?
I don't know.
We're going now.
We're going with it. Okay. Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
And we're back. Today, we are having a conversation, again, kind of addressing a question that we've been asked, or that we have heard whisperings and rumblings of other people asking or talking about out there in the community, which is the question of, how is it ethical for Lori to have started a podcast with me as her client? So we're going to unpack that and dissect this ethical question. Before we do that, I just want to say that the people that are asking this question are actually not really the professionals in the world, which we'll talk about more specifically later. But it's genuinely been people who don't actually have a clue about social work ethics. They just think that they know what's what, and they actually don't have a clue. And so it just feels like they know, and so they just decide to make an issue of it.
Sure, make a comment on it. Or it's people who haven't really listened to the podcast, so they don't understand really the nature of what we've been doing.
Right.
So let's talk about what ethics actually are. So the study of ethics examines the rational justification for our moral judgments. It studies what is morally right or wrong, just or unjust. I think, honestly, part of what has made this such a hot button issue is that we really want these kinds of things to be absolute, mm-hmm. right? There is always a clear straight line, right or wrong. That's the most comfortable space for us to be in. But honestly, the whole reason why the study of ethics is it's something you can major in and you have to study in order to go into professions is because it is far more complex than just a simple yes or no. Okay, the example that I came up with, which, you know, I don't know. I tried to see if I could think of something that was a little bit more, I don't know, illuminating. But
I feel like this is a perfect example.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay, so the idea is we have to consider the fact that the more complex a situation is, the harder it is for there to be an absolute black and white answer to it. And human beings and the human condition and the things that go on out here, it is typically a lot more complicated. But let's just start with a fairly straightforward, simple example that most of us can relate to. So your friend comes to you and says, "Do I look fat in this dress?" Okay. So even something as simple as that actually has some nuance, right? So I don't know, Kate, if you ask me, "Do I look fat in this dress?" and you were just I don't know, checking it out, considering in the dressing room, I would absolutely tell you the truth, right? Because, mm-hmm. right, that's what you would want from me in that situation.
Yes.
But how about if it's a bride about to walk down the aisle in her wedding gown and she says, "Oh my gosh, I'm having a crisis. Do I look fat in this dress?" The only ethical answer in that moment is absolutely not. You are stunning. You are beautiful. Go be a happy bride.
But just for clarity's sake, we are not here to say,
honesty
truth
doesn't
is
matter.
Like a gray right. area.
No.
Right? Okay. When we're talking about asking somebody if they look fat in the dress, that's a whole different story.
That's really about kindness.
Yeah. Yes.
Which and compassion. The questions really on the table are, is it ever ethical for a clinician to move from client clinician to podcast partner? Is there ever a situation where that could possibly be okay? Is there ever a situation in which it's ethical for a clinician to move from clinician client to a nonprofit partner? How about is it ethical to take an action that creates dissension and turmoil, right? As we know, there has been dissension and turmoil that has emerged because of the podcast, right? How about, is it ever ethical for an abuse survivor to publicly talk about her abuse? Mm. Right. That's really kind of what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
So I know that we have sort of glanced along these conversations, but we're going to try to unpack it in more detail.
Yeah.
So we're going to walk through some of how we came to the decisions we made, and then specifically talk about the social work ethics and how our decisions square with those ethics.
Yeah. Okay. So, but back to what I was saying before about who's asking those questions. So a really great example of this is when we first, the first time we went to Massachusetts, and we had a connection, we had a contact that reached out and said, hey, listen to the podcast. Shout out to this contact's husband who found the podcast. And we ended up going to Massachusetts for a fundraising event and then meeting, you know, some of these people. Two separate licensed clinical social workers said to us, you know, it's interesting, when I first learned about the podcast but hadn't listened yet, my initial reaction was, oh my goodness, like, who do I need to like beat down? Their concern, though, was not the concern that we typically hear of, oh my gosh, is Lori profiting from this, or is it ethical because blah, blah, blah. What their concern was is Kate being re-exploited? Is her story being re-exploited in some way by Lori? Then, as licensed clinical social workers, they each listened to the podcast and very quickly came to the conclusion that, oh no, this was a choice by Kate to do this. Lori is alongside her, supporting her and making that choice. Both of them are incredibly supportive of our work, incredibly supportive
of us. Are now our friends.
They're friends, right. They're people within our very close circle.
Because honestly, I respect the idea that if you just hear about it and you don't unpack it or get to know what's going on here, a professional social worker, a professional in the mental health field should be saying, hold up, is this something that is doing harm to the client? Yes, that's the right question.
That is the right question. And that's not the question that we typically get asked, though.
Right? It's, am I benefiting?
Are you benefiting? Is it ethical? Is it gossipy? It's right. That kind of question, right? These professionals were more concerned with what's the safety and risk to this person who's sharing. So this survivor, they're both people who work with survivors of human trafficking regularly. And so that was their concern, right? That's not the general concern, though.
No.
The general concern is not for me. It's for, are we benefiting? Are we in business together? Are we, is it ethical? Blah, blah, blah. People who want to discredit, people who want to tear us down.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
So when this question first started coming up, honestly, I mean, I understand the issue involved here, right? It is not appropriate for a professional to engage with a client outside of the therapeutic relationship. Yes, that's a no-brainer, right? But the question that I ended up honestly asking is, how could it be ethical not to engage in the podcast with Kate? She was unsafe. She was being stalked, threatened, assaulted. The systems that should have been in place to protect her had failed repeatedly. I had done the social work job of advocating on behalf of the person who I was called to help, and those doors kept being slammed in our face. We were left to a place of what then? Mm-hmm. And so yes, doing a podcast was the most responsible thing that I could think of, that we could think of to do to try to improve Kate's safety. Oh, and by the way, who would ever think that being silent about a danger to society like this, that being silent about this could be ethical? How is the duty to warn the community about this happening? How could it be considered unethical to warn the community? We have to keep in mind, there were some very specific events leading into February of 2022 when we started the podcast that brought us to that point of a podcast being the path of last resort. We haven't really talked about all the things, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So on purpose, because you do in fact have the right to choose what specific details you're going to share.
I know I've said this before. I'm going to repeat it. So before we ever started the podcast, which by the way was a long time in kind of processing through that, and it started out as a joke, like, hey, we just started a podcast. Oh no, but maybe we really should. But it was a long journey of like, how do we do that? How do we do it safely? How do we ensure that it's going to be something that is going to make me safer? And or again, like I've said before, it's an act of desperation, putting my own story into my own words out into the stratosphere, right? One of the steps that we took before we started the podcast was to connect with an organization called 1211 Partners. McKivens is the founder and CEO of this organization. She's a human trafficking survivor herself. She's a public figure. She lots of speaking engagements and lots of trainings. Her organization is really amazing. And one of the things that they do is helping survivors of human trafficking tell their story, right? Whatever that looks like, however that is, what they do is helping survivors share their story. We reached out to her and said, hey, can we, you know, just get a consultation? Can we talk to you about what you think? And the biggest piece of advice that I took away from that was to know your boundary. What she said to us is, if you listen to any interviews that I've given, you've heard me say the same things over and over again, right? You've heard the parts of my story that are relevant for that specific interview, and that's it. There are so many parts of my story that nobody other than my therapist and my husband will ever know, because that's not, those are areas of my life and of myself and of my story that I'm never going to get comfortable with sharing publicly. So when you enter the public sphere as a survivor, you have to always hold that boundary. That's really hard to do. It's something that has been a struggle, because the gut reaction of every survivor I've ever met, including myself, is to give all the details, to be credible, to justify it, to make it make sense, because
the feeling ends up being like, oh, okay, if only you understood more. Maybe that's what's needed here. Maybe you just don't know enough. Right. So maybe if I explain a little bit more, then you'll believe, understand, get on board.
Right.
That's not true.
No,
but the temptation is there.
Right. And so, but I've held on to that advice of know your boundary, right? And so, yeah, there are things in my experience, in my story, that we have not shared publicly, very intentionally, because those were things that were being held as my own personal experience and not something I was okay with having in the public sphere. I didn't come up with that advice on my own. We literally were given that advice, know your boundary, from someone who does this for a living. So anyway.
Right. So decisions were made about what to share and what not to share. Kate made those choices. The decision to move into the podcast space was made with a great deal of thought and conversation and consulting people who are already in that sphere. But the big picture here is, again, back to the idea of social work ethics. A very important value in social work is the person and their environment, right? The idea that we all understand that, right? We understand the impact. Okay, so if a person grows up in poverty, we understand that that environment affects their development as a human being. Someone grows up in some war-torn or is living in some war-torn nation. It's a no-brainer for us to say, yes, of course, that environment affects the way that that person thrives or does not thrive. So this idea that a person like Kate, who was continuing to be stalked, threatened, harassed, right? That environment was critically important for her overall well-being. And by the way, it is impossible to heal from trauma until a person is safe, physically and emotionally safe. And so as a professional responsible for helping Kate move into a healing space, it was my obligation to continue to find ways for her to be safe so that healing could actually happen. Healing cannot happen, again, cannot happen when a person is unsafe. So we had to keep moving forward. Okay, so specific social welfare principle here, right? So feel free, folks, go to the National Association of Social Workers, NASW.org, and look up the Social Work Code of Ethics, right? So one specific code of ethics looks at social welfare, and I will quote what? Why are you laughing at me? She always laughs at my
professional
things.
No, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at a joke in my head, because I always have a joke in my head, you know? But I was going to say, like, is there like a church... Oh. Social work association, right? Like, because I feel like, again, if I'm thinking ahead of time, like it's going to be like, oh, but.
Well, let's look up the biblical counselors.
Oh, yes.
That's what that would be.
Just yes. Every, like.
So it kind of, you can imagine like a code of ethics is broken down into compartments, right? So the social welfare compartment, I will quote from that. It says, social workers should advocate for living conditions conducive to the fulfillment of basic human needs and should promote social, economic, political, and cultural values and institutions that are compatible with the realization of social justice. Pretty clear that this podcast would fall under that heading. Also under social welfare, it says social workers should act to prevent and eliminate domination of, exploitation of, and discrimination against any person, group, or class on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, color, sex, sexual orientation, and so on and so forth. So yes, going as far as I could possibly go to make sure that Kate would not continue to be exploited is very much consistent with social work ethics. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So I think the next piece that is very important for people, maybe, I don't know if people fully understand this. I think that people who listen to us understand that we have a flow that is pretty unique. Mm-hmm. And
we special.
We in all kinds of ways. This thing that we have going on here is one of those situations where 1 + 1 equals more than 2. That, and you can't, I can't explain why it is. It just is. And the truth of the matter is that I would not be able to do this without Kate. Frankly, the world needs a firsthand survivor experience. It is critically important. And by the way, Kate is hysterically funny, is incredibly organized, keeps us on track, and is like, she is the person. Okay, she says that I can sometimes be a bit abrupt in my email communication because I am
if
just
you've ever
busy.
Received an email
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude.
You can email me instead.
I'm just saying, okay, I don't apparently don't do that very well, but Kate does. Kate is much more of a, she's a rapport builder much more than I am. So again, she's got her roles and I have my roles over here, like bringing the research stuff and the brain science, which Kate rolls her eyes at. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you roll your eyes at it so much anymore.
I don't anymore because I very much see the benefit of people needing that backing to understand exactly how this works.
Right. So the reality is that the combined presence of the both of us was critically important. And oh, by the way, Kate being unsafe out in the community means that she could not travel to do meso trainings by herself. Mm-hmm. Not only is that is okay. I hope you can't hear Silas in the background, but he's barking probably at the Amazon guy.
I think I actually just like elbowed the wall.
Oh, he thought someone knocked.
Yeah. Okay. Like by accident.
Okay. He's always here to protect us from what perceived danger.
Right.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. That idea that it is very important to have both aspects of it, that the mm-hmm. two of us, and we repeatedly get this feedback from our trainings. Oh, that's where I was going. I was going with the idea that you literally could not travel alone and be safe. And on top of that, it has to be someone that you feel comfortable with to do that with you.
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't do this with really anybody else. But we hear the feedback of needing both sides of it all the time, right? There's a huge push, and this is so needed and valid and all the things that professionals want to hear from people with lived experience. Why? Because they're the only ones that really can explain the experience. Like, that's the only person that can give the specifics and can really talk through how it feels and how that is experienced and how the help that's being offered is experienced, right? And so that's super necessary. They also, professionals in the world and people like the U.S. Attorney's Office and law enforcement and DCF workers, all these people that we are training, they also need the science to back that up. They need the letters after Lori's name to be able to fully, fully learn from what it is that we're saying. So it does take both of us. Lori wouldn't necessarily be the one that's hired in Massachusetts from New York State or Idaho from New York State or anywhere else for that matter, just because the letter's after her name. And I also couldn't do this by myself for a whole host of reasons. And so it does take both of us. That's just the reality.
So I think the point in saying that is it would not be possible for us to be bringing this information to the community, to the world, if it were not for both of us. And so ultimately the ethical question became, as long as Kate's well-being is not harmed by this process, then we must be aware that the greater good is served when we are able to bring this information forward, and it takes both of us. And that did in fact require a shift in our relationship.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
So that idea that it's a basic social work value for the person in their environment to be empowered and for the general good of society to be enriched. That's very clearly so when it's a question of the commercial sexual exploitation of children. Mm-hmm. Like, how could that possibly be unethical to bring to the attention of the world?
Right.
Okay.
We also started the podcast. I think people a lot of people jumped in when it was already kind of gaining traction and there was, like, you know, millions of people who were looking and listening and all the things. But in the very, very, very beginning, we started with just a microphone on a pillow in Lori's office. And it really was just giving me a chance to, like we've said from the beginning, tell my story in my words, what happened, so that if the worst case scenario should happen, it was encapsulated somehow in my own words, right? We had no foresight, there was never a thought that crossed our minds of this could gain traction in the community and we could be where we're at now. Like, not even a little bit. Like, ever. Like, I actually remember, this is like a little off, but I didn't meet Christiana until like April. And then I met with her in May of the year that we started the podcast to do the website. And I remember her saying to me, we needed all these things because it was gonna like explode. And I was like, it's not, like, we're just
two fools doing a podcast.
Yeah. Like, I was kind of like, you're so nice and so cute that you, and like, holy shit, she was right. You know, like, amazing. But like,
when we started, we were scared.
Yeah.
If you listen to the early episodes, you can totally hear that. We were like, we don't know what we're doing. We just know that we're doing this thing and it's something neither one of us have done before. And I don't know what's going to happen next.
But we started it without any intention of, oh my gosh, the whole world is going to hear this. It was more like, the offenders will probably listen and it will put them on notice that I am no longer keeping their secret. I am no longer living under their fear of silence, right? I am no longer doing that. And so that's who we assumed would be listening.
Right.
And also the fact of it's putting it somewhere, it will be saved as in my own words, because I had no foresight that I'd even make it through this, to be honest with you. I really didn't. I thought this is a last ditch effort. And like, I really hope that, I don't know, that this works somehow or something, right? And so, yeah, there was no thought process of like, this could really be like, we could be famous and rich. By the way, we are neither of those things.
No. Nope. We're talking, I'm thinking about, read anything about sexual abuse survivors and you will hear about power and voice and how critically urgent it is in the process of healing for a survivor to regain their sense of having the right to choose how their life goes and use their voice to talk about their experience.
It's why organizations like 1211 Partners exist, to offer support to survivors who need to do that, who want to do that. There are survivors, Kat McGibbons didn't go public with her story for safety reasons. She did it because she wanted to use her power and voice, and she felt like she could add something to the human anti-trafficking community. And so she did, right? Rebecca Bender did the same thing. Like, this is a thing. Like, this is not...
Right, right. It's not unique to us.
No.
And it's not to get famous and rich. It's, I think, very important for everyone to tune in and connect to the idea that Kate and I were having many conversations about the best path to keep her safe. And ultimately, we made the decision. Kate made the ultimate final choice about that, but we made the decision together to move into the podcast realm because we had exhausted everything else. And the same thing, like, it ultimately, we had many conversations about, honestly, each step along the way. Ultimately, Kate has the right and had the right to make the final decision for how she wanted to proceed for herself. Mm-hmm. The social work ethic of self-determination, I quote, social workers respect and promote the rights of clients to self-determination and assist clients in their efforts to identify and clarify their goals. Social workers may limit clients' right to self-determination when, in the social worker's professional judgment, clients' actions or potential actions pose a serious, foreseeable, and imminent risk to themselves or others. The truth of the matter is, Kate's decision to move into the podcast with help and consulting made her safer, not less safe. Mm-hmm. So she was unsafe. What else was she supposed to do? What else were we ultimately supposed to do?
Right. So another huge like question that, again, we don't really get asked, but we hear the whisperings of, is people actually are not even asking the question. They're making the assumption that the podcast is monetized and that somehow Lori and I are profiting in a monetary way from this.
We resisted people saying to us, why aren't you monetizing the podcast?
Oh my God. Yeah.
So the podcast is not monetized.
Okay.
Never has been.
Let me go back though and talk about why, right? Because most podcasters who actually set out to like do a podcast and not just like what we just explained of like,
if you do it for the purpose of profit, you monetize it from the start.
Right.
There are options to put ads in.
Right. There's a lot of options to do that. And most podcasters who are doing a podcast solely for the goal of doing a podcast, not for any of the things that we just discussed, the safety concerns, the power and voice, all of that, that actually was the whole of the decision that was made. But most people who start a podcast, they do monetize it because that's their goal, right? They are going to do a podcast, so they monetize it. There are so many reasons why we never monetize it and still have not and never will. First and foremost, because money feels icky to me. Like, it's very difficult for me to talk about. I'm actually struggling with this in the nonprofit world because guess what? Being a nonprofit leader, that's pretty much the deal, is like constantly trying to maintain funding and maintain like, okay, where are resources coming from and all the things. And that's hard for me. Like, it's very sticky. Because obviously, being a human trafficking survivor, money has bad connotations and it has bad feelings. Like, I don't ever want to feel like I'm being purchased because I was purchased. I don't ever want to feel like my story is being purchased, right? And so monetizing the podcast was never even a question on the table because there was no way I would ever have felt okay with that. And so therefore the podcast has never been monetized. We've not made a single dime from any of the things that we've put out there. I mean, I think what do we say our Facebook earnings for the last 4 years, because Facebook does like weird things like that, was like $27. Like, cool. We'll donate it somewhere. So yeah, it was never monetized. Now I'm again thinking people are going to be like, right, but you had a GoFundMe. Sure. A friend of mine.
And by the way, you can do a GoFundMe. Anyone can do a GoFundMe for anything.
Oh yeah. Our friend Alex told us that one time she found a kitten on the sidewalk in New York City and she started a GoFundMe to find it like resources and a home. And she raised like 100K in like 2 hours. Right.
Right.
For a lost kitten in New York City. So like, yeah, you can literally start a GoFundMe for anything. But still, that being said, money was super sticky for me. And again, this is not something we've ever talked about because these are the parts of my story that I just have not really chosen to share. But a good friend of mine started the GoFundMe, suggested that we did it, said, hey, there's, you know, everything comes with a cost and you need all of these things. And so I'm willing to start this for you. And we agreed to it, but it was sticky. I remember like she launched it and I texted her and was like, take it down. I can't do it. I don't want this. I'm so uncomfortable. And I'm so, again, I don't ever want someone to think that I'm doing any of this for the money, or to feel that icky feeling of I'm just being purchased, right? Or that now I owe somebody something because they donated. Like, I can't deal with that. That's like, we've had that happen even in Mezzo where it's like there's a strings attached to the money and I can't, that makes me fly off the handle. So, okay, all of that to say that no, the podcast has not made us any money aside from, yes, we had a GoFundMe. Yes, we used it for all the things that needed to be used for in terms of safety and all of the things. But no, the podcast has never been and never will be a business, right? No. So that's the other part of this is people have been saying, oh, well, Kate and Lori went into business together. No, we didn't. We sat on a couch together with a microphone and I told my story into the microphone and Lori helped me do that and supported me and consulted together and we together did this thing. But okay, timeline. That's actually what you asked me to talk about. And no. I went off on a total soapbox.
That was good.
Okay. So again, I don't think we've ever really talked about this, but the podcast started February of 2020, was never monetized.
2022.
Sorry. I don't math.
That goes not math thing.
Okay. My God. My kids have been asking me, they got like money for Easter because like, we're not trying to do like too many sweets in our house right now. And, then they were buying things and they kept asking me to like tell me how much they would have left. And I'm like, I don't math. Like, you have a phone. Please figure it out yourself. And then I would look at my oldest and be like, Noah, how much will she have left? Anyways, okay. So 2022 is when the podcast started. Squirrel.
In traffic.
In April of 2023 is when Lori and I made the official decision to no longer have a therapist-client relationship. It wasn't until then, July 2023 is our official incorporation date for our nonprofit, Mezzo Allies. And it wasn't until September of 2023 that we were officially a 501c3 nonprofit and had that status from the federal government. So again, no. As client, therapist, and that relationship, were we in business together? Nope.
Nope.
Not ever.
No, we weren't. And to go back to, again, the code of ethics about conflicts of interest. I quote, "Social workers should not take unfair advantage of any professional relationship or exploit others to further their personal, religious, political, or business interests." Nope.
Nope. Didn't do that.
Also says, social workers should not engage in dual or multiple relationships with clients or former clients in which there is a risk of exploitation or potential harm to the client. Nope. The whole point of this was to help, not for me to benefit.
Right.
Absolutely.
Nobody benefited from this. Other part of it. Like, yes, the social work ethics say that you shouldn't benefit as a professional, but Lori, I didn't either. Nobody has benefited from this. You know who's benefited from this? All of the people out there who now know how to keep their kids safe, who now know that this type of human trafficking exists. All of the professionals that we've been able to train to say, hey, for the next kid that's standing in front of you, this might be a situation that's happening because it's real. It happens. If you don't believe that it can happen, then you're going to miss it when it's standing right in front of you, right? That's who's benefiting. All the people that left Cornerstone Church because it said, hey, we don't want to have sex offenders sitting in our pews. Those people benefited.
We did not.
We did not.
We got a whole lot of stress.
We got safe. We got safer. I got safer. Mm-hmm. I was able to, with GoFundMe money, purchase safety things and all the things that I needed to be able to secure my life, right? So absolutely, which is completely reasonable.
Yeah. If you can do a GoFundMe for a kitten off the street, it's totally reasonable to
do a
GoFundMe.
Someone else that I know like has a gaggle of children, not even like foster adoptive kids, like just literally just doesn't use birth control and like has a gaggle of children, right? Like, I'm so serious about this. We were not cutting this. Someone that I know from college, which I went to Liberty University, all that needs to be said. They like, their van broke down and they started a GoFundMe to like be able to fix their van.
Oh, but are they being expected to like show receipts and account for like every...
No, they're not.
Just checking.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
So the 2016 version of the American Psychological Association code includes the clear statement, quote, "Multiple relationships that would not reasonably be expected to cause impairment or risk exploitation or harm are not unethical." Don't think you can be much more clear than that. Okay. I have not gained from this experience. In fact, I have donated hundreds of hours of time to this, to the podcast, to Mezzo, and that is not the definition of profiting, I think.
No, it's not.
And that's not honestly unique to Mezzo or to the podcast, frankly. That is the way that I have chosen to live my life and do my career. I have donated the adoption foster care ministry that I was involved in, I donated all of my time. When they tried to give me a gift card or give me a check, I donated it back to a family within the organization. So this is just how I have chosen to function as a human being. So I don't know what to say about that, frankly.
But nobody's worried about that. Nobody's like, I mean, Lori, there are clients of yours that attend that church. Like,
right.
Right. Is it ethical for you to volunteer your time with a church that is...
Well, that is one of the things. That's one of the social work ethics that I didn't kind of include in this. But they do talk about the reality that in small communities, it is almost impossible to not have dual relationships. If you live in a very small rural community, for example, it is very hard. There's maybe okay, if you live in a town of 500, you're probably going to have one clinician and you're probably going to go shop at the same grocery store. Your kids go to school together. How are you going to avoid a dual relationship in that situation? The church is another one of those small communities, right? Mm-hmm. Very hard to avoid dual relationships in those kind of environments. They are not automatically unethical. They are unethical if it somehow is to the detriment of the client and to the benefit of the clinician or social worker. That is the key. And honestly, I hold that ethic to be very near and dear to my heart. It is very clear to me that when I am working with someone, when someone has sought me out professionally, there is nothing about me that is relevant in this relationship. I am there to serve and to be a person that they need me to be in whatever way that is. So yes, it is unethical for the social worker to benefit in some way for it to be about them. But the truth of the matter is that in truth, other than relationship and the sense of doing something that is good and positive and honestly living out the social work ethics, I have really not benefited. In fact, it has been a major stressor in my life. So this
has it been?
Yeah, a little bit.
Breathe.
A little bit. Yep. So I don't know. We didn't talk about this before we wrote it down, but it feels like Darvo to me that mm-hmm. we have to keep addressing mm-hmm. this. So yeah. That deny, accuse, reverse victim and offender, right?
Yeah.
It is the idea that here we are out here, frankly, trying to do something that is very hard, but very good and important for society. And yet we continue to get this like, well, I don't know, you know, mm-hmm. is this really ethical question?
Honestly, it's just like anything else that we do. If it's not one thing, it's another thing, right? So if yeah. people are like, oh, okay, well, I've heard enough information and I believe that all this happened, but I still want to find something wrong with this. So then I'm going to ask the question of if you know, oh, Lori was your therapist. That's right. Not ethical, right? We felt really strongly over the last few months that it was important for us to set the record straight, to offer the information. People will still pull it apart because that's what they do, right?
I want to say too, I think one of the things that people react to is they listen to us and we obviously really care about each other.
Yes.
Right. Our relationship, I think, comes across loud and clear. Mm-hmm. And again, I think people are like, well, I don't know. Lori doesn't sound like she's staying behind the professional veil. Well, that's true. Certainly at this point in our relationship, you've said many times that you've learned all kinds of things about me since April of 2023, because I am now much more of a whole person in this relationship. But the truth of the matter is, what kind of robot would I have to be to have walked this out with Kate and have no emotional investment in her or in this relationship? That's ridiculous. And frankly, if I ever get to that place where I can be coldly sitting with somebody who's going through it, I need a new job.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do care deeply about each other, and I'm sure that does come across loud and clear. And no, I'm not going to apologize for caring about the people in front of me.
No, neither should you.
No. Okay.
All right. That's it. That's all we've got. As always, thank you for listening. If you are, I'm always going to plug Mezzo because, you know, got to survive. If you are interested in learning more about what we do with our nonprofit, you can check out our website, mezzoallies.com. Thanks for
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.